presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
If we were to be completely honest, we would say that there are a lot of bad memories for Georgia in the 2016 season. Georgia lost to Ole Miss in blowout fashion, and the Rebels didn't even make a bowl. Georgia got beat in heartbreaking fashion to Tennessee, and while you know the Vols were the preseason pick to win the SEC East, the truth is that Hail Mary in Sanford Stadium was about the only really impressive moment for the Vols all season long. Georgia also lost to Vanderbilt and Georgia Tech, and all, you know, really shapes, forms, and fashions, this for Georgia was a season to be forgotten in so many ways. And I don't mean to make you go back down a road you don't want to go back in terms of thinking about some of these games, but I do think it leads us to a pretty interesting discussion today. And as a setup for this, let me go back in time to what Chip Tower said on an episode of Dog Nation Daily during the season last year, after those losses started to pile up, lost to Florida, lost to Vanderbilt, after it was really obvious the Georgia season wasn't going the way that many people hoped that it would. Chip said, hey, for Kirby Smart, a coach during his first year, this is a coach and a program going through some growing pains. Here's how Chip explained it then.
What nobody knew about Kirby Smart, and let's be clear, Georgia made a change because Kirby Smart was going to be available. So Georgia, the power brokers behind the scenes in Georgia, got what they wanted in Kirby Smart. But what you could not know is how Kirby Smart would be as a head coach. I mean, this is a big jump, and you had no way of knowing that. And he is going through all the growing pains that you normally see with a first-year coach.
Yeah, you couldn't know how he was going to handle that first year, but there was an assumption that you probably could make. There was maybe a reasonable expectation to be had that there would be some moments of difficulty for Kirby Smart. Now, were there more moments of difficulty maybe than some of us expected? I think the evidence is there to suggest that it was, but we knew there would be some trouble throughout the year. And as Chip kind of laid out just how much trouble there was, it even got to a point during the 2016 season, maybe even bad enough that even Kirby admitted that during his first year, he had some things to learn and some tough moments where he was forced to learn quickly about what maybe he thought he knew about being a head coach, what maybe he thought he knew about running a program that turned out not to maybe quite be the way that he expected to be. Here's how Kirby Smart talked about his own efforts at improving himself as a head coach back during last season when things were looking pretty dire.
Yeah, I would say that you look at that always, how you're doing things, but the message that's being delivered, that doesn't change, which is that we need to improve as a group. We need to improve as an offense. We've got to improve as a defense. I mean, we tell the kids all the time that it's not just them, it's us. You know, and it's very important that they understand we can improve, they can improve, and everybody can. It's a joint effort, and I think that's really, it's really important that they know that they've got that relationship with you.
So, yeah, that's how Kirby Smart kind of explained that about how he was going through that at the time. And the reason why I bring all this up is because the folks at CBS kind of noticed some of this last season, too. The growing pains that Chip Towers talked about, the learning opportunities that you just heard Kirby Smart talking about. Well, CBS lived through all of that as well. And as it's re-ranked its coaches, the pecking order of college football coaches for 2017, what CBS has decided is maybe Kirby Smart after 1 year is not as good as we thought he was. Because they even make mention. And you can see this at CBSSports.com. I'll put a link to this in our show page at DogNation.com. This is something they do every year. It's all their grouping of college football writers. And last year, with Kirby having never coached a game before, CBS decided he was the 46th best coach in the country with literally zero evidence to base that on. But after 13 games worth of coaching experience, maybe CBS has said, maybe not quite as good as we thought he was, moving him from 46th last year to just 54th this year. And the explanation coming from CBS is that Kirby Smart was ranked higher last year for someone, and he was ranked highly for someone who had never been a head coach before. But he had that Saban sheen, which is sort of an interesting phrase. CBS goes on to say, seems some of that wore off after what was generally considered a disappointing 8-5 season in Athens. So to kind of paraphrase what CBS says there is, we thought he was good last year because he had worked for Nick Saban, and we assumed he was going to bring some of that Nick Saban magic with him to Georgia. Maybe one day that might happen, CBS is saying, but didn't provide a lot of those magical moments here during his first season. So for 2017, we're going to move him down down the pecking order of coaches in college football moving forward. And the reason why I bring this up on the show here today is because as harsh as that evaluation might sound for a Kirby Smart, the fact of the matter is the evaluations are only going to get more harsh than that moving forward. This is the combination of dual expectations here, after all. Kirby Smart, what's expected of him because he worked for Nick Saban and because he had been a defensive coordinator on teams that won national championships, combined with a program, Georgia, that seems to have all the resources going forward, everything that you can possibly imagine for a program. When you put what Georgia has going forward as a program with what was thought to be a fast riser as a coach, put those together, and the expectation is going to be from a lot of both fans and media alike that the winning's going to happen somewhat quickly. And really, you don't have to look all that, you know, far down the, into the past or around the country to kind of find examples of how this is true. Think about what Dan Wolken, the columnist from USA Today, said when he was on the Atlanta radio station 92.9 The Game a couple of months ago. As a matter of fact, I'll let you hear it for yourself. This is what people are saying about Kirby Smart, not just after a disappointing first season, but about what needs to be kind of a put up or shut up second season. Here's how Dan Wolken said it on Atlanta radio not too long ago.
Let's not give Georgia that much of a pass. If Kirby Smart doesn't win the East next year, right, he's a clown. I'm sorry.
Whoa! Blank. Whoa!
They are so far above the rest of that division in terms of talent right now, with the players that they've got coming back. Give me a break. The expectation for Georgia next year should be winning the East, point blank period. If they don't get that done, then I have to seriously question whether Kirby can coach.
Now, you can sort of quibble if you want to with the very beginning of that statement, the very end of that statement about calling Kirby Smart a clown. Maybe that's the kind of thing that you do on sports radio, and if you're writing a column, maybe you don't say that. And questioning about whether or not Kirby Smart can coach, that may also be taking it too far. But the other aspects of what Dan Wolken says there in that clip, one we've played for you here before on Dog Nation Daily, I don't think can necessarily be disputed. He says that Georgia is so far above the rest of the SEC East. Isn't that almost objective? Objectively true, when you look at the string of recruiting classes, not just for Smart and his two Februaries on the job, but going back to the last two Februaries of Mark Richt's tenure as UGA head coach. Isn't it objectively true that Georgia just has way more raw talent than what Florida and Tennessee have going for it? And shouldn't that give Georgia a huge advantage in the SEC East? And Wolken also uses the phrase there that we've used here on Dog Nation Daily a lot, that word expectations. What we've said here in the past is that Georgia fans ought to embrace those expectations. Shouldn't be afraid of being the favorite in the SEC East, and frankly should demand that Kirby Smart and Georgia kind of go out and live up to that end of the bill. And from that standpoint, that really becomes the bottom line of this entire discussion. That the, you know, the kid gloves, I think, on the part of the media are going to kind of come off for Kirby Smart here in year two. About the way that he's assessed by columnists like Dan Wolken when they show up on local radio interviews, and a group of writers at CBS when they kind of put their heads together to rank college football coaches. They're going to look at George, and they're going to look at Kirby Smart, and they're going to say, how is this marriage working out? And if Kirby Smart improves his win-loss record by just one game in 2017, that may be some improvement, but really all you've done then is kind of gotten back to the record that got Mark Richt fired after the 2015 season. The truth is, a lot more is going to be expected of Kirby Smart than just that. It's time to win. It's time to win quickly, and on this point, it sounds like the fans and the media are kind of in agreement. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. It is great to have you with us. If you listen to us on the radio, thanks for doing that. Noon every day on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. If you watch us live on Facebook Live each and every morning, we come to you at 10 a.m. We appreciate you doing that. Also in podcast form on iTunes. And then we also post the show there at dognation.com. However you get to us, just thanks for finding us, and thanks for making us a part of your off-season routine here as we get ready for Kirby Smart's second season coming up in Athens. And by the way, speaking of Dog Nation, we're also really excited about our Dog Nation Invasion giveaway to South Bend, courtesy of Kroger. You can go to dognation.com. You can click the banner right there at the top of the page. You can get signed up for this, get registered for this. It's not just a spot on the Dog Nation Invasion bus, although that is included as we travel from Chicago over to South Bend. It also includes your chance to win airfare, lodging, tickets, the whole nine yards for the big trip. It's all there courtesy of Kroger. It's our Dog Nation Invasion giveaway to South Bend. Go to DogNation.com, register for your chance to win. And by the way, think about Kroger as you think about Mother's Day coming up this Sunday. The flowers to give to your mom. The flowers you want to put that vase, or is it vase, however you say the word. If you're putting that out for your Mother's Day lunch, get those fresh flowers there at Kroger. Get everything that you need right there at Kroger Supermarket. They got it for you, our Dog Nation Invasion giveaway, courtesy of Kroger. All right, we've also got a fun show for you coming up. We're going to check in with Chris Doering, the SEC Network analyst. We're going to talk to him about his assessment of Kirby Smart. Now, this is also interesting because Doering had seen Kirby Smart at G-Day. He was one of those SEC Network analysts working as a referee, one of the officials during the game. So we'll hear from Chris Doering about that and kind of where he thinks Georgia kind of ranks in the pecking order of the SEC East. And, of course, Chris also played at Florida. So we'll talk to him about, you know, how he views that Georgia-Florida rivalry here on Dog Nation Daily. Before we get to any of that, though, let me also quickly remind you that it's time for our Gator Hater Countdown, now 170 days away from the world's largest outdoor party in Jacksonville, Georgia, Florida, this October. Of course, we're looking forward to it because we believe that a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater first and foremost. And if you're like that and believe the same thing that we do, the best way for you to show that is check out shopdognation.com. Get your very own Dog Nation Daily Gator Hater t-shirts. You can see these for yourself. They are great. They got the brand new Dog Nation Daily on the logo on the sleeve. You got the Gator Hater license plate insignia on the front. It's all there for you at shopdognation.com. We've restocked the sizes once again, and we've got free shipping for you there, so I hope you'll check that out. It's great to have you with us on Dog Nation Daily. And we'll say hello to here to Chris Doering. He is analyst for the SEC Network. Also had a chance to see the Georgia Bulldogs at G-Day in kind of a unique fashion, working as one of those officials on the field. First of all, Chris, let me say thank you for once again being back with us on Dog Nation Daily. How you doing today?
I'm doing well. Great to be on with you again. Thanks.
Well, it's great to have you here. And let me start with this. How was your G-Day experience? Both, you know, what being in Athens, but also being on the field in one of those officiating roles. Was this your first time doing anything like that? What was that like for you?
Yeah, so first off, Athens is one of my favorite places to visit in the conference. I always have a great time getting up that way, so I certainly appreciate the hospitality from everybody, overlooking the fact that I was a former Florida guy, so I do appreciate everybody taking good care of us, and it was the first time I've done anything like that. Now, earlier in the football season, I had an opportunity to participate in the mock college football playoff selection committee, which was really eye-opening and a chance to kind of see exactly what those guys go through and what that process is like, which was cool in and of itself. But having the opportunity to experience a game as a referee provided me a whole new perspective and appreciation. In fact, I told Steve Shaw, who was kind of running the thing, I told him, look, if the goal here was to keep us from saying anything disparagingly about the officials on TV, it's an accomplishment in and of itself, because I had such a difficult time concentrating on what my assignment for as a line judge and knowing what I was doing. And obviously, you know, I'd only had about a four-hour briefing on what we were supposed to be doing, but really a tremendous appreciation for the pressure that goes along with being an official in the Southeastern Conference and the skills that it takes to be really proficient at that job.
Yeah, listen, I mean, I'm as guilty as anyone of occasionally probably criticizing officiating, and yet I'll be the first to also tell you that I don't think I could do that job. And for you guys that had to do that day, it's an example of just how tough it is to pay attention to every aspect of that and keep really a lot of thoughts in your mind at one time.
It is, and really, people ask me, like, what did you think about the Georgia Bulldogs spring game? I couldn't tell you. I really have no idea what the score was. I have no idea who did what. I was so worried about getting the receivers lined up in their spots and making sure there was no holding on the tight ends or tackles and everything else that I really didn't pay attention to what was going on with the game. In fact, I mentioned that to one of the regular officials, and they said, yeah, that's, when we leave the stadium, we barely know what the score is and have no idea, you know, kind of what the flow of the game was like, just because you're so focused on what your job is. So it was an eye-opening experience, and even more so after the game when we had to go through the review and look at some of the video on our calls that were good and some that weren't so good, and the accountability that brought as well definitely made me much more appreciative of those guys, for sure.
Well, your comment kind of ruins my next question, because I was going to ask you, so what'd you think of Georgia that day? But it sounds like you were pretty focused and busy on the task at hand. And so I'll kind of ask the same question a different way. I mean, have you had a chance to pay much attention to the conversation that's gone on around Georgia here this offseason, both moving towards the second year of Jacob Eason, whatever push he might have gotten from the true freshman Jake Fromm, the return of Chubb? I mean, what have you made of this kind of offseason conversation going on around Georgia?
Well, I like Georgia, obviously, what they've been able to do. I think Kirby's done an excellent job of recruiting and brought some excitement around that program there. And I experienced it myself as a player at Florida. When you have a guy that played at the university that you're now coaching at, there's something more passionate about that and something more invested. And when they go out to sell that on the recruiting trail, it's a much easier sell. So I think Kirby certainly has the credibility, having played at Georgia there in the 90s, and the passion for the university. And that has seemed to be contagious amongst the fans and the folks surrounding the program and the recruits that they're bringing in as well. You know, as far as the quarterback controversy, if you so say, I was asked this the other day about, you know, Fromm pushing Eason, and you know, I just think that first off, anytime you have competition at any position, it's going to bring out the best and those guys that are involved in that competition. So, you know, Jake Eason not being the guy that's going to be handed the job necessarily, I think makes him have to compete a little bit more. But if you look at the success, when offenses have been successful in the conference over the last 5, 6, 7 years, it's because of experience at the quarterback position. I look back to 2013 when you had such a great group, including, you look at those guys. Mettenberger was there at the time. You have a number of guys that had experience, and the offenses really were able to flourish because of it. And I think this is, you look, last year there was probably, 9-10 different spots that were being filled by inexperienced quarterbacks. That Jacob Eason went through last year, I think, really provides him a head and shoulders advantage over any competition coming in because of the good things that happened to him, the game-winning drive against Missouri, bringing him back in that situation, and then some of the struggles that he has as well were opportunities for him to learn and get better through as well. So I think, you know, Eason's the guy in my mind, but competition is always a welcome thing if you're a coach.
So we were just talking about Kirby Smart before you joined us on the show today, and kind of looking at some of the national reaction was to Smart's first year, and it seems like there was some kind of, I don't want to say underwhelmed, but it seems like some people maybe expected more from Smart because he had been a former Alabama assistant. He was taking over a Georgia program that had, you know, if not championship success, certainly a consistent track record of winning 9 or 10 games. And it seems like there was just some, you know, disappointment on the part of some media members about how Smart's first season played out. I mean, do you think that's a fair criticism to say that he should have won more than 8 games in his first season at UGA?
I don't think there's any reason to judge what he did in his first season. I think that is more of a result of a cultural issue that exists now where everybody expects immediate results and don't understand the process that it takes in turning around any entity, whether you're talking about a business or you're talking about a team. You have to get in there. You have to, you know, roll up your sleeves and make changes that fit the vision that you have for your team and put your fingerprint on it. So, you know, could they have won a few more games last year? Sure. I mean, there were definitely some disappointments. I think that the Ole Miss game obviously was one that stands out in my mind. But at the same time, as I mentioned for Jacob Eason, those struggles ultimately propel you to get better as well. So I think there are things that they went back and looked at in the off season, things that maybe schematically they were doing that they could improve, maybe from a personnel standpoint that they can improve. But I think you have to look at a coach over a 4-year period before really feeling like you have a good picture of what they've been able to accomplish. And I know that that's really not possible anymore because of the money that these guys are paid and the instant gratification that comes along with that. But I do believe that you'll see an improvement this year from what you saw last year. But to me, to judge him on his first season critically is premature in my mind.
Well, let me talk to you about your alma mater for a moment, because obviously we're still very early in terms of making a prediction for the SEC East, but a lot of Georgia fans are making that side-by-side comparison between Georgia and Florida at the moment. And for the Georgia fans who are convinced they're supposed to be the favorite in the East, what they're going to point to is, hey, Georgia's got experience at quarterback. Florida's likely going to have a guy in Felipe Franks who will be playing his first college game. Florida just lost a bunch of defensive talent to the NFL. Georgia's likely going to bring back as many as 10 starters from its defense. You know, you can make a comparison with the running game. You know, Florida's hoping that Jordan Scarlett become a 1,000-yard back, yet Georgia's got two backs on its roster that have both been 1,000-yard rushers before, and Chubb and Michelle. What is maybe the thing that Georgia fans are not considering about Florida, about why Florida might be a better team than some of that data that I just mentioned might suggest?
Yeah, I think one of two things, and you know, I think you start on the defense. You lose 8 starters from that defense last year, a number of those guys going early in the draft here last month. But one of the benefits from last season for Florida, the number of injuries that piled up forced young guys to have to play. And those reps that they got last year, I think, are going to show as being beneficial this year. Voshon Joseph's a guy that you got some valuable experience there in the secondary. A number of guys had to be thrust into action because of injuries. So I think I think that's a silver lining of all the injuries that were suffered last year, is some experience that'll help transition from a big loss on that side of the ball. And then offensively, you talked about the quarterback position, and then that has been underwhelming over the last couple seasons under Jim McElwain. In fact, 4 different guys have started games in his 2-year span at Florida. But I don't think it all has to be about the quarterback. I think one thing that Florida's done a good job of is upgrading the talent around the quarterback position. The receivers are much deeper. They have some continuity at the receiver coach position, something they hadn't had in a long time. Also, the offensive line should be better. Number of guys, you mentioned Scarlett, but Thompson and P. Ryan had a little bit of a punch back there as well. And the tight end position probably is as deep as any in the conference with Goolsby and some of those folks there. So I think that the quarterback, as I mentioned before, the experience that Easton gained last year is going to be a benefit. The fact that Felipe Franks or Kyle Trask has not played in a regular season college game is going to be a detriment, and you're only going to be as good as your quarterback can do. But I don't think he has to shoulder the whole load, whoever that is. He has to be a game manager, a guy that can distribute and let some of those upgraded playmakers around him do the heavy lifting.
We'll finish up with this, Chris, and of course we appreciate your time on the program today. On this show, one of the things we try to be very honest about is the current state of that Georgia-Florida rivalry. I'm a big believer that Georgia fans ought to claim that is the program's number one rival, and ought to admit the fact that over the last couple decades, it just has not been good enough against Florida. Your time with the Gators was when really all that really changed. That's when Florida became the great program and kind of put Georgia kind of in the rearview mirror. From your perspective as a guy who's an SEC network analyst now, but also saw this rivalry from the orange and blue perspective, I mean, how big do you think the Georgia-Florida rivalry is supposed to be, and what's Georgia got to do to kind of get back in this thing a little bit?
Let me state, first of all, that growing up in Gainesville here as a lifelong Gator fan, the Florida-Georgia game was the bane of my existence. It created nightmares for me as a kid, the 80s with Herschel Walker, you know, the Lindsey Scott from Buck Ballou. All those plays resonated throughout my life. And so that was the biggest, most important rivalry for any Gator fan during that period of time. And as you mentioned, I had the luxury of being a part of the Florida team that kind of turned the tide. In fact, Coach Spurrier, when he came in, made that the number one goal for Florida in beating Georgia, because any of the other goals that were out there, winning the SEC East, winning the conference, playing for a national title, started with beating Georgia. And I think sometimes when you have the kind of dominance that Florida's had over Georgia the last 2 decades, people, they lose focus on how important that game is. I think a lot of folks have now turned their attention here at Florida to the Florida State game. You know, Tennessee became a bigger rival throughout, but I still think it's a huge rivalry for both schools. Obviously, the onus is on Georgia right now to try to break some of the winning streak that Florida's been on throughout that period of time. And in fact, I think that's why we ultimately saw a coaching change for one reason, was the inability to get over that hump there. So I think that it's my favorite game of the season. I love that they re-upped in Jacksonville. I think that the half red and black, half orange and blue is one of the coolest scenes in college football. And you know, I think it is always interesting as an analyst. You like to see a little bit more balance in that rivalry. I'll say as an alum, I'm okay with the way things are right now. But certainly, I think that Georgia's on the uptick, and I'm just excited to see the East become more competitive in general, because when I was playing there in the mid-90s, it was all about the East, and the West was the inferior division, and things have kind of flip-flopped here over the last 10 years or so. So hopefully the East can be get back to some of the competitive the stature that they had earlier.
Hey, Chris, outstanding stuff. Thanks so much for being with us here on Dog Nation Daily. Before we let you go, can you tell folks how they can either find you on Twitter or some of the stuff that you have going on this offseason, how people can check in with you?
Yeah, you know, actually a little downtime after finishing up the spring work with the SEC Network. We'll be back in August getting ready for 2017. But I am a little bit of an infrequent hit-or-miss guy on Twitter, but you can certainly follow me there at Chris Doering.
Hey, Chris, we just really appreciate your time. Hope you enjoy the summer. I hope you have a good time with your family and friends, and we'll look forward to catching up with you again here on Dog Nation Daily very soon.
No, anytime. I appreciate you guys having me.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, good stuff, as I said, with Chris Doering there on Dog Nation Daily. Great to have him on the show. We'll transition here. We'll do our SEC Through. I want to remind you, make sure that you check us out on SEC Country Live. We'll be 3 p.m. Eastern time today on the SEC Country Facebook page. That's myself, the former Alabama All-American Mike Johnson. We're all there for you. Hope you'll check us out 3 p.m. Eastern time every Monday through Thursday on SEC Country Live. And also, I told you early in the show about our Dog Nation Invasion giveaway to South Bend. Don't forget our Dog Nation Invasion, one of our sponsors, U.S. Auto Sales. And, of course, you may know this already, but the average buy here, pay here car is like 8 to 10 years old. The average age of cars, though, at U.S. Auto Sales, just 3 years old. You see, new dealerships want good credit, and the buy here, pay here guys, they overcharge for tires, old beaters that they just put fresh wax and new air freshener in. But U.S. Auto Sales is different. They offer better, newer model vehicles and quick and easy in-house financing. So regardless of your credit scores, you get more with U.S. Auto Sales. That's the fact. You can check them out online at usautosales.info. All right, I told you earlier about where Kirby Smart ranks on CBSSports.com's list of top coaches in college football for 2017. Way too low on the list for him. How about some of the other SEC coaches here for a moment? Now, the top 25 has not been released yet. I should point that out here for a moment. Top 25 hasn't been released. But we do know most of the SEC coaches, because frankly, most of the SEC coaches aren't in the nation's top 25, according to CBS. Here are the other SEC coaches that we do have from the CBS list. They've got Brett Bielema from Arkansas at 27. They've got Hugh Freeze from Ole Miss at 33. South Carolina's Will Muschamp comes in at 37. Kevin Sumlin from Texas A&M, he's number 40. Ed Orgeron from LSU, maybe a little surprising, all the way down at 48. Butch Jones, Tennessee, 52. Vanderbilt's Derek Mason at 53. Then, as I said, you get to Kirby Smart at 54. And the SEC Smart ahead of only Mark Stoops from Kentucky and Barry Odom from Missouri. So, a few interesting takeaways here in terms of how Smart compares to a few of the other coaches in the SEC. For starters, according to CBS, Kirby is ahead of only 2 SEC coaches in terms of, you know, expectation performance, ahead of just Stoops at Kentucky and Barry Odom from Missouri. Kirby Smart even ranks behind the Vanderbilt coach for a moment, and let that sink in, but it's also probably a fair point to bring up given the fact that Mason won head-to-head against Kirby Smart last year. Kirby also ranks well below coaches who were pretty clearly viewed to be on the hot seat. Guys like Butch Jones and Kevin Sumlin and even to a certain extent Brett Bielema and Hugh Freeze. These are all hot seat type guys, and yet all ranked ahead of Kirby Smart. Some of them rank well ahead of Kirby Smart. And then, you know, how about Will Muschamp at 37? What is that, 17 spots above Kirby Smart, if I'm doing the math? Very good chance that I'm not. Here's Will Muschamp, who's kind of a laughingstock to a lot of Georgia fans, and he's ranked very high in front of Kirby Smart here. And I know this is just one group of media opinion, and this is not, you know, end-all, be-all. This is not fact that you take to the bank. But it is, I think, a pretty interesting assessment of where opinion does stand for Kirby Smart right now. And I think the takeaway here, as I mentioned in the early portion of the show, that the only thing that Kirby Smart can do is go out and win right away. And not just win an extra game to get to 9 wins after the 8 from a year ago. That only matches what Mark Richt did in 2015. You got to do even more than that. Otherwise, on lists like this and the kind of evaluations that really matter, the ones that come from the most important boosters and the rank-and-file fans who speak out on shows like this one, then the evaluation is going to be even more harsh next offseason if Kirby Smart does not get it done in a very big way. A few other takeaways that I want to get to from this CBS list here. I just rattle off 10 names. So according to CBS here, only 4 of the SEC's 14 coaches are among the 25 best coaches in college football. Now, if that's true, it very well might be. You know, by the way, the names that have not been mentioned so far would be guys like Kevin Sumlin and, guys like Dan Mullen, Nick Saban, Gus Malzahn, and Jim McElwain. But if that's true, boy, you can really make a case that the SEC's got a pretty significant coaching issue, right? I mean, this is kind of an indictment of the league's coaches that so few could be reasonably placed in a top 25 list of the best coaches in college football. And what's even more interesting about this is that I don't necessarily think there'd be that much argument, that much pushback from anybody to say that they are wrong. As a matter of fact, some of the coaches that will show up in the top 25 here, Jim McElwain's not even loved by all of his fans. We've had Florida fans on SEC Country Live say that the overall sort of public opinion rating of McElwain down there in Florida is only about 50-50. About half the fans think that he's doing a pretty good job, about half of them think that he's not. Dan Mullen seems to be far more loved by the media than he is by the average Mississippi State fan. Now, there's not a huge number of State fans necessarily, but you know, they're not okay with being, you know, fourth, fifth best in the SEC West, just avoiding the cellar. They want more than that. The media is impressed by Mullen exceeding expectations, but the fans have the same expectations other SEC fans have. Mullen's not universally popular with his own fans. And the same thing is certainly true for Gus Malzahn at Auburn, who I think will probably have a pretty good year this year. But overall, you do have to point out here that when SECCountry.com did its own approval ratings for coaches not that long ago, as voted on by the fans, the approval rating for Gus Malzahn was absolute dead last in the entire SEC. So here are some guys who are kind of, you know, in the top 25, and even their own fans aren't quite so sure they're doing all that good of a job. It is really a weird time in which there's this huge disparity between Nick Saban at the top and every other coach in the SEC. I don't want to say tied for last, but certainly there's no obvious second, and there's no clear upper tier. The upper tier right now belongs to Nick Saban and Nick Saban alone, which in some respects may be good news for Kirby Smart a little bit, because why not him making the jump? Somebody's going to make the leap this year. Somebody's going to jump in to a higher, you know, stratosphere in terms of public opinion about job performance. With Kirby Smart, the talent he has in this Georgia team this year, putting a better record together, putting a better season together, why would he be less of a candidate to do that than anybody else in the SEC? We'll see how it plays out, and we'll make that your SEC through. All right, as we wrap up the program here today, I want to send some congratulations out to the Georgia baseball team, who got a victory last night over Georgia Tech, and this was a wild game. It wasn't on TV, I don't think, so I didn't get to see what happened with this. But apparently it was supposed to be a called strike three, or at least that's what the thought might have been on a Georgia player. He ends up walking and then scores from first on a shallow single after that that enables Georgia to get the victory over Tech last night in SunTrust Park and takes a series sweep for the season, winning all the games this year against Georgia Tech. And by the way, good job by the both Dogs and Jackets raising money for charity last night. Big crowd, somewhere in the neighborhood of, I want to say, 28,000 people there for Georgia Tech there at SunTrust Park. And this is a fun backdrop for college baseball. You like the idea of these games being played here in the stadium. Hope to see a lot more of that in the future. Like raising money for charity, and it's always fun talking about a Georgia victory over Georgia Tech. Thanks so much for being with us on Dog Nation Daily. We'll see you tomorrow.